Okay. Paper 116, section 2, which is old single column, page 1269. I don't think we need any major intro here. This is just continuing right where we picked up. You'll see that they wanted to give us a lot of little points in what they've written. It's like I brought up last time, a number of points that if you're really paying close attention as you're going through, you should, now what exactly is up with that? Remember, that's kind of a very obvious modus operandi that they're doing here, is just behind the surface, all through here, is something that can be noticed. If you so choose to go beyond the limitations of the eyesight that the history of mankind has given you, sort of, the culture that you have grown up in and has sort of directed your vision in relative to God in certain directions, can you let go of that a little bit? No fear that you're going to lose anything, and start to see the bigger picture. And maybe just one thought occurred to me there. Again, remind you that in that regard, that transition from where we've been in thinking about God to where they want to take us, there's probably few things that are more key to that transformation than to distinguish the words deity and God. It's why that's the very first thing they bring up in the foreword. It doesn't start with God, it starts with deity, and then they explain what they're going to mean by God. This is really the key, because in order to have any success in beginning to appreciate that difference, you have to really start to take the unity viewpoint. Basically what they're saying, you think that you've begun to develop a spiritual consciousness, so you must have some measure of a unity viewpoint. Well, yes and no. Have you taken it all the way? Or have you just done what mankind has done for a long time, where they see an individuality like a tree and they imagine that it somehow has unity inside of it? Is that what you're doing with your unity consciousness, sort of filling things with it? Or have you really? Can you really let go of individuality and see things where all is one? The fundamental characteristic of, or attribute of, deity is unity. All is one. And then from that unity, you develop facets of that unity. And relative to those facets of unity, you express individuality. So one of those facets is the Father. You imagine the personalization of that facet, God the Father. You're still in the unity viewpoint, but that then manifests as an individuality point, so that you can turn it around and look at it and think, oh, okay, that's kind of like me. I'm an individuality, and there's a grand individuality. But to really start at the top, to start with deity, and then get to God, and then get to individuality, that's key to beginning to really understand the Supreme, and definitely key to understand the Mother. Okay, so let's jump in. Who wants to take Take section two here. Okay.
He's got a book.
What is this thing?
It's going all old school.
It's on paper.
Where's that iPad?
All right.
Let me boot it up here. Pretty fast boot, yeah. Huh? I figured somebody would say something.
Okay.
Section two.
Two,
the Almighty and God the Sevenfold. The appearance of the universe power presence of the Almighty is concomitant with the appearance of the stage of cosmic action of the high creators and controllers of the evolutionary super universes. God the Supreme derives his spirit and personality attributes from the Paradise Trinity, but he is power actualizing in the doings of the Creator Sons, the Ancients of Days, and the Master Spirits, whose collective acts are the source of his growing power as Almighty Sovereign to and in the seven super universes.
Okay, now that, on that second paragraph there, right away, like I mentioned last time, you see God the Supreme. You're going, ah, that's a unity viewpoint designation. So they want me to immediately, before I read anything else in the paragraph, they want me to be in the top-down viewpoint, unity looking down towards individuality. And what do they say? You can see there's his and he. Yeah, that's right. When I'm looking from the top down, I see I'm looking through the absolute. There at the top of the finite, at the total finite level, there's the supreme being. There he is. Okay, but that's the individuality word. I mean, I'm very purposeful. Okay. God the Supreme. If I'm really looking at him top down, God the Supreme is there. He's there. Okay, so put yourself in that in the place there, God the Supreme, and you're looking down into the finite, and what do you see? You see your spirit and personality attributes coming up from the Paradise Trinity, and you see your power coming up from the Supreme Creators. So that's the basic image in that. These two streams coming up and merging into you. This upward flow into you. Now, of course, we could look at it in the other direction. Here you have God the Supreme all together, and then he's reaching down into the finite, and the very, very focused, fully focused fact of God the Supreme spreads out to engage the whole finite when you look at it that way, and so that. The God, the Almighty aspect, the power aspect, spreads out through the whole finite, all the Supreme Creators and all that they're doing, and God the Mother also spreads out. Now, if you're paying really close attention when you're reading this, there's something else besides what I just said. I seem to have summed up everything there, but it says, God the Supreme derives his spirit and personality attributes from the Paradise Trinity. You're going, oh, wait a minute. Here I am, looking down into the finite. Paradise Trinity is not down there. Paradise Trinity is back up at the infinite level. What the heck? And I know that they told me back in the Paradise Trinity paper that the Trinity doesn't have any attributes. So how... I don't understand. What is the meaning of this statement? How could the Supreme be getting attributes from the Trinity when the Trinity doesn't have any attributes to give? It's this kind of noticing, this kind of thing that sets you on the journey looking for the answer. We did that when we went through total deity. I keep pointing to that. What we finally figured out is what sentences like that mean. Let's just take a little aside and drop back to the Paradise Trinity paper. So, old single column, page 113. It's paper, paper 10. Yeah, of course, paper 10. Paper 10, section 5.
It's a long drop back.
Yep. But we're going long.
What's the page?
So old single column 113, But paper 10, section 5, paper 10, section 5, first paragraph. Okay, that section entitled Functions of the Trinity. And let me just read through this, and let's bring this into play with that little passing. This is definitely an aside. You know, where the main point of what we're reading is about the Almighty, not the Trinity aspect of things directly. But we couldn't help but notice that that sentence didn't make any sense, it seemed. Let's see if we can figure it out. Okay, so that first...
Different books.
Okay, everyone ready?
Paper 10, section 5, paragraph
1. Okay. The personal deities have attributes. But it is hardly consistent to speak of the Trinity as having attributes. See, right there is that one I was referring to, that sentence. This association of divine beings may more properly be regarded as having functions, such as justice administration, totality attitudes, coordinate action, and cosmic overcontrol. These functions are actively supreme, ultimate, and within the limits of deity, absolute, as far as all living realities of personality value are concerned. Okay. Touching on what we brought up. We're going through total deity very carefully. Yeah. If you just scan further down, you'll see, Trinity of Supremacy, Trinity of Ultimacy. Remember we talked about that? Okay. Even Trinity of Absoluteness. We're thinking about here, up in the paper we're on, we're thinking about the Supreme. How does the Supreme, where does the Supreme get what it's made out of? Where does that come from? And if we think about those, the functional levels of total deity, we remember that there's a level that's called Supreme, because in that level, one of the two things that's in that level is the Supreme, the deity that we're talking about making here. But there's another facet of deity that's on that sixth level, that supreme level, the infinite upholder. And just like they're pointing out in this section, alluded to right there in the first paragraph, the Trinity has functions. It functions on the absolute level as the Trinity of absoluteness. It functions in the absolute as the Trinity of ultimacy, and it functions on the level of the total finite as the Trinity of Supremacy. Okay. So there's actually, even though there's just two facets of deity on that level, there is also a functionality in play on that level, coming into it from downstep down from the Trinity. The Trinity of Supremacy is functioning in that level. And they've already told us that the Trinity is involved in making the Supreme. So it's not like Trinity interacting with the Supreme, somehow making the Supreme. That doesn't make any sense. We're trying to make the Supreme. It's got to be something else. Well, there's only one other thing. The Trinity of Supremacy has a relationship there to the Infinite Upholder. But what, it's the Trinity of Supremacy. It's this downstepped expression. So that relationship is not going to be on the infinite level or the absolute level. It's going to be the finite upholder. We gave it a name. The obvious name for the relationship between those two. The infinite upholder is a part of whom? Right, God the Father. The personal deities have attributes. Okay? These attributes that we're going to give the Supreme have to come, they can't come from the Trinity, but they could come via the functioning of the Trinity. Yeah, that's exactly what we've figured out. The infinite upholder is the source of the attributes, because that's part of that which has attributes. In relationship to that functioning of the Trinity, that downstep functioning of the Trinity, gives rise to an expression of deity. Remember, the infinite upholder, that's one of those deity facet names that has the adjective infinite in it. It's a reservoir. Something can be actualized out of that reservoir. You take the whole reservoir of upholdingness, the infinite upholder, and out of it you draw a measure, you know, that engages the total finite. It's called the finite upholder. It has attributes. Those attributes only got manifested via the functioning of the Trinity. Yeah. And again, it's just reminding you this whole bit about functions of the Trinity, you know, and how this is kind of missed, because you have coming around this way, around the infinite internal ellipse, in the existential direction, you've got the triunities, that functioning of the existential points, you know, the seven absolutes of infinity. That's the functionality coming around. But there's a functionality that comes around the other way from the Trinity. Trinity of absoluteness, Trinity of ultimacy, Trinity of supremacy. And the two functionalities meet, you know, in a sevenfold. So that's the answer to the attributes. See, if you put it all together, you can only do it if you just think about what they say here, and then you finally put the deity and reality paper and the foreword together, like we did in that total deity exercise. You put those together so that you actually know what you're talking about, those functional levels of total deity, and then it's just obvious. It's just staring you right at the face how it works. Where do the attributes come from? And why the Trinity is involved. Everything. Okay. Now, the other thing to notice, look at how they describe these functions. Justice administration, totality attitudes, coordinate action, and cosmic overcontrol. You heard me mention here a couple times recently, the best way to begin to understand what kind of deity is labeled the mother is to begin to get a couple keywords that you can label it with and then look for that. Okay, totality attitude. Womb. That's what we've been calling womb. Coordinate action. That's what we've been calling focalization. Focalizing. You know, as we were talking last week. You know, focalizing. Cosmic overcontrol. Upholder. Womb, focalizer, upholder. That's mother. The three that we'd already brought up are right there in the list, in that order. Womb, focalizer, upholder. Now there's one other thing there too. Justice administration. And this is taking even one more step aside. Let's just do it really quick to remind ourselves of that aspect that comes into play relative to the mother. Because this relates to what I believe it was last week I was pointing out. It's very important, if you're going to understand the mother, to not think, you know, begin your approach to understanding God the Mother creating, you know, an exalted anthropomorphic notion, starting with a female human, and somehow extrapolating that up, because that's starting at the wrong place. That's starting with individuality and going up. That works kind of, sort of, for father, but it really messes you up. You try to do that with mother. You've got to go top down to understand mother. I mean, and fundamentally, if you do the anthropomorphism route, you're going to end up with father, sword, mother, salve. You know, you're going to have this kind of dichotomy-like notion of father and mother and deity, or sword and salve. And you don't want that. Because yes, there can be some soothing. But even the father can provide soothing. But this justice administration, a great example of mother in that mode, not womb, not focalizer, not upholder, but justice administrator. I've pointed out a number of times recently. That's if you go to the problems of the Lucifer Rebellion, Papers 54, Section 5. You don't need to all turn there. It's just a short little thing. I'll read it. But if you want to go, you know, remember where it is. Paper 54, the second of the Lucifer, you know, Rebellion Papers. Paper 54, Section 5. And there's a list of items in there related to the wisdom of delay, the title of that section. item number 10 is about Mom. The divine minister of Salvington issued as her, and they even see purposes, her, there, remind you, we're talking mother here, her. The divine minister of Salvington issued as her third independent proclamation a mandate directing that nothing be done to half cure, cowardly suppress, or otherwise hide the hideous visage of rebels and rebellion. The angelic hosts were directed to work for full disclosure and unlimited opportunity for sin expression as the quickest technique of achieving the perfect and final cure of the plague of evil and sin. That's not salve. No soothing there. They were directed to work for unlimited opportunity for sin expression. Try as you might to limit it, the angels are going to be working against you. They've been ordered by Mom. Okay. That's justice administration. Justice, she wants it to be perfect and final. Now, you know, and now in universe terms, it's swiftly being executed. So just, that's a, you know, a little aside for the for that other facet. But relative to the Supreme, our first effort is to begin to recognize those other three: womb, focalizer, upholder. Yeah. All right, so let's go back and keep going.
Paragraph 3, John.
Given to the term yet in the Justice Administration, womb,
upholder. I don't know. Not yet. I'll think about it.
I'm sure you will.
Are you ready?
Yep.
Unqualified paradise deity is incomprehensible to the evolving creatures of time and space. Eternity and infinity connote a level of deity reality which time-space creatures cannot comprehend. Infinity of deity and absoluteness of sovereignty are inherent in the paradise trinity. And the Trinity is a reality which lies somewhat beyond the understanding of mortal man. Time-space creatures must have origins, relativities, and destinies in order to grasp universe relationships and to understand the meaning values of divinity. Therefore, does paradise deity attenuate and otherwise qualify the extra-paradise personalizations of divinity, thus bringing into existence the supreme creators and their associates, who ever carry the light of life farther and farther from its paradise source until it finds its most distant and beautiful expression in the earth lives of the bestowal suns on the evolutionary worlds.
Just pause there a second. And just notice the parallel in what we just, you know, that one little paragraph we read there back in the Trinity, they made a point of giving you the hierarchy, you know, where they gave you these functions are actively supreme, ultimate, and within the limits of deity, absolute. You know, the Trinity of absoluteness giving rise to the absolute upholder, the Trinity of ultimacy giving rise to the absonite upholder, the Trinity of supremacy giving rise to the finite upholder. So you have that downstepped expression from that side of the original. And now they're just pointing out what we've long studied, the downstepped expressions from the other side of the original, which finally meet us and the Creator Sons and the Creator Mother Spirits. But to just see, when you look, you know, when you take that little aside, you know, they're very definitively giving you this picture, starting with the original and going from both sides of the original and getting to you. You know, and right now we're worried about the Almighty Supreme primarily. And so the main thing they're focusing on here is what's coming down, you know, from the existential side, you know, the first source and center side. But everywhere in here there's these little asides. Don't forget there's the other side too. You know, you're missing half the picture if you just, you know, look at it from this side. Let's see. Oh, there was one other little thing there. that whole bit about origins, relativities, and destinies, we mentioned that way back at the beginning of the previous paper when they brought up relativity of concept frames, and they were pointing out, as they're reiterating there, you know, recognize what your challenge is. You have an immediate tendency to think of everything in a line. Here's an origin on this end point of the line. There's a destiny on the other end point of the line. And I'm relative to those two endpoints. I'm 40% from this end and 60% from that end, you know, or I'm 30% from that end and 70% from this end. You know, that's the relativity. You know, it's just linear relativity between the two endpoints, the origin and the destiny. And that, you know, gets you started with some things. They've taken that and using the seven absolutes of infinity, they've played that for everything they can, using all of their wisdom to try to construct a book that gets you as far as possible with such a limited starting point as a line for a model for reality. But definitely, like I was saying, if you're going to begin to understand the bigger picture, you've got to let go of the line. You've got to start to see it from the unity viewpoint. You know, and it's got, your thinking has to be more nonlinear, you know, relative to, you know, that sort of thinking, you know, literally thinking that you can visualize as a line. It's so linear. Yeah. All right. But nonetheless, let's make a vertical line as a starting point here. That's what they're going to do here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 levels in a vertical line.
So yeah. That's unity downward, right?
Yeah.
To individual.
Down to individuality.
Okay, great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is the origin of God the Sevenfold, whose successive levels are encountered by mortal man in the following order. 1, the Creator Sons and Creative Spirits. 2, the Ancients of Days. 3, the Seven Master Spirits. 4, the Supreme Being. 5, the Conjoint Actor. 6, the Eternal Son. 7, the Universal Father.
Okay, and this is this is the creator list. You know, we'll get to the controller list a couple sections forward. So it's the creator side of God the Sevenfold, and they did a little thing there again, just kind of teasing you to, you know, say, well, what about? Notice that they purposely wrote creative spirits, instead of creative mother spirits. You know, and because they want to start you out, see, they're trying to start you out just in the father point. You know, but you know, we know that I could look at it in a fuller viewpoint. I could even make it master creator sons and creative mother spirits, really flesh out that, you know, in level in full. And when I do that, I'm just begging for, well, yeah, if I have kind of this, you know, this twofoldness on that level 7, what about, you know, at least about levels 2 and 3? Is there something that's more womb-like relative to those two levels too? Just like we know our creative mother spirit makes our mindful womb. She's our local upholder. You know, through her, you know, through the individuality, her individuality of this local whole, we are connected one to the other. You know, that focalizer, upholder, a womb. Is there something relative to that with the other two levels of the Supreme Creators? It's just sort of just begging the question. You know, the very moment that you say, oh, I want to stick mother in there because I want it to be, you know, more complete. I don't want it to just be way back in the beginning times before the primary eruption when it was just a creative spirit. But see, the very act of you, them sort of encouraging you to do that, you go, well, shouldn't I put mother in the other ones too somewhere? Just notice that. It's very purposely, see. They're always up front giving you father, but just begging you to get more of the picture. See if you can fill out the rest of the picture. Okay.
The first three levels are the Supreme Creators. The last three levels are the Paradise Deities. The Supreme ever intervenes as the experiential spirit personalization of the Paradise Trinity and as the experiential focus of the evolutionary almighty power of the creator children of the Paradise deities. The Supreme Being is the maximum revelation of deity to the seven super universes and for the present universe age. By the technique of mortal logic, it might be inferred that the experiential reunification of the collective acts of the first three levels of God the Sevenfold would equivalate to the level of Paradise deity, but such is not the case. Paradise deity is existential deity. The supreme creators, in their divine unity of power and personality, are constitutive and expressive of a new power potential of experiential deity. And this power potential of experiential origin finds inevitable and inescapable union with the experiential deity of Trinity origin, the Supreme Being.
Okay. Now, this is an attempt to challenge the line that they drew in that previous paragraph. Like they're just saying, if you're thinking in a line, it's like, well, okay, what we often call, coming around the ellipse this way, let's forget about the ellipse and let's just grab that arc and make it a line. A vertical line, like we just painted here. And it's like, well, if I imagine starting at the Supreme Creators and going up, I mean, if this came down from existential deity, if I go back up again, I'm going to go back to existential deity, aren't I? But you don't. You're going, well, what the heck? That doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's the only place I can go. There's only a line, And I'm at the bottom. I can't go this direction. All I can do is go up. I should revert back to the existential deity, like they're saying. And yet you don't. Why? Because the line is, not serving you very well. It's an ellipse. You're here in level 5, God the Sevenfold. And you're not rooted. And this process, this evolutionary process, is not taking you back this way towards level 1, 4, 3, 2, 1. It's going this way. It's going towards the Trinity, the source of experiential deity, God the Mother, not existential deity, God the Father. That's, so they're just, notice how they don't explain why they have that paragraph. They just put it there, and they want you to go, well, okay, what the heck does this paragraph mean? Why are they italicizing those so sharply and challenging me to see if I can live in my linear logic and saying, look, it broke. Did you notice? What's the limitation of your initial assumption here, guys? That's what they're doing. But without, they don't spoon feed it to you. It's just there. If you grab a hold of that paragraph and don't let go of it until you sort it out.
Ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
God the Supreme is not the Paradise Trinity. Neither is He any one or all of those super universe creators whose functional activities actually synthesize His evolving almighty power. God the Supreme, while of origin in the Trinity, becomes manifest to evolutionary creatures as a personality of power only through the coordinated functions of the first three levels of God the Sevenfold. The Almighty Supreme is now factualizing in time and space through the activities of the Supreme Creator personalities, even as in eternity the conjoint actor flashed into being by the will of the Universal Father and the Eternal Son. These beings of the first three levels of God the Sevenfold are the very nature and source of the power of the Almighty Supreme. Therefore must they ever accompany and sustain His administrative acts.
And you have to know those little things. It's just really fun. The very first line of this paragraph, and the very last line, repeat the word. They give you the fancier word. In the first line you have concomitant. And then the last line, you have a company. Okay. Yeah, same thing. They begin the section, or they end the section as they began it, by again reminding you of how hand in hand you have to think of this. If you're going to understand the Supreme, You can't go, okay, let me stick all the little marbles off, you know, away from each other, and then I'm going to point at that marble there, and that's the supreme. Okay? You can't think of it in simple individuality terms where you neatly can lay everything and put nice dividing lines between all the little individualities. That gives you a pretty limited viewpoint. Like they said way at the beginning of the previous paper, I mean, all you really have there is, you know, in some abstract way, I guess I take the really big he marble, the universal father, and I imagine that this other little smaller marble over here is the smaller he is the supreme being, and okay, so that's like, okay, so there's a big he and a little he marble. It doesn't get you very far, that perspective. If you want to really understand the supreme, it has to be something that you can visualize as a motion. That's so painfully static, that picture. You need something that's fundamentally dynamic. So you need to see this concomitant flow, like they said, up, you know, welling up and reaching down simultaneously. Both are happening. Lines don't allow that. Only a nonlinear picture of the whole allows you to have both at the same time. Both the top-down and the bottom-up views functioning. And let them not only be arrows in opposite directions that are just, you know, they're static. Let them be literally flows. You to think of it as a dynamic phenomenon. That, you know, that the supreme creators are creating this upwelling, this upward-directed flow, you know, and which is action and which is reaction. Both are. There's a downwelling that goes with it. You know, the supreme and the supreme creators are this simultaneous bidirectional flow. They accompany one, they go hand in hand.
When I read the paper 11, mm-hmm. The Isle of Paradise, I went back and read it after I mentioned it a couple weeks ago in this class. And it says, it directs, the nether side of paradise directs these energies, but it hardly drives them. Doesn't drive those energies.
Right.
Well, what is described is almost like a pumping heart. Right. It doesn't drive them. So it's almost like this energy is like what you just described. It's flowing. Yeah. And there, and even Nether Paradise is directing the force charge of space, the mother force of space. It's just directing it. Yeah. The flow is already there. There's already, it's
right. And to just appreciate that the flow originates within. Okay, the focalizer is ubiquitous within. It's not without and directing it from without. It's within. She is within. Okay. Ubiquity, not omnipresence. Yeah. From within, not from without.
There's an interesting picture there in that last paragraph. This business of the Almighty Supreme is now factualizing in time and space through the activities of the Supreme Creator personalities, even as in eternity the conjoint actor flashed into being by the will of the Universal Father and the Eternal Son. So they're taking the latter, an eternity act, which they've time-spaced for us before in depiction earlier, and trying to give us a microcosmic view of the Supreme Being in, you know, tiny, almost dribs and drabs, you know, pieces flashing into existence in terms of the Almighty over control of the Supreme by virtue of every act of Michael and the Creative Mother Spirit that works to the result of greater control on any world, in any nation, in any family, in any constellation, wherever it's happening, that has incrementally allowed the Supreme that greater over-control, and there's that sense in what you're talking about, the back and forth.
Right.
Which is a really weird thing if you meditate on this at times, and sometimes when you're in a state of consciousness and you get a weird image that you or a feeling that you can't quite put into words, but has that kind of paradoxical aspect, yeah. like a dual flow, something that doesn't really fit three-dimensional experience.
It's a
very interesting thing to contemplate, that the Supreme is actually, in this moment, a little stronger than it was a moment ago.
Right. Yeah, and how you're part of that, what you can only initially describe from a linear viewpoint as a bidirectional flow. But of course, what it really is something more unity-like and less extrapolation of linear. But, it's a very, I'm glad you brought that up, because, I mean, everyone should take up this challenge. See if you can challenge yourself to really, let your adjuster see. And like you're saying, your adjuster knows this. Your adjuster has this nature. It can help you to, especially this is one of the things. The more experience an adjuster has, the better it can bring the unity, the non-linearity of true unity down into your more linear mind and have it invoke some sense, some feeling that you can't even quite put into words, but he can do it. And you'll begin to appreciate this. It'll have a logic to it. Because that's what you're really trying to do, is discover a greater logic. Not let logic be a synonym for linear rationalization. That is only logical because you've put endpoints on it. You've put boundary conditions on it. That isn't just random rationalization. It's quote unquote logical. True logic is much more than just endpoints on linear rationalization. And the three great gifts can help you. The Holy Spirit, the Spirit of Truth, and the Thought Adjuster can help you to begin to have a sense of that. That more holistic picture. Yeah, Jason. Let's do Jason first.
Thank you, Chris. The very second sentence, God the Supreme, while of origin in the Trinity, becomes manifest to the evolutionary creatures as the personality of power only through the coordinate functions of the first three levels of God. The sevenfold. Mm-hmm. So what are those first three levels?
The 1, 2, 3 up there, the Supreme Creators.
What?
Number 1, 2, 3 in the list of seven, which together are called the Supreme Creators. Creator of Sons, Creator of Mother Spirits, Ancients of Days, and Master Spirits.
Well, why doesn't it include the fourth of the Supreme Being?
Because that you're taking what those first three are doing and you're expressing it into the fourth. It's where the fourth is coming from, out of the first three. At least that's part of it, And most particularly, it's like they're saying there, the Almighty part, the Almighty Supreme part of the Supreme. That very much you can just think of as this power personality synthesis that's coming up from those three levels and being expressed in the fourth. Or if you look at it in the functional levels, around the infinite eternal ellipse, it's coming up out of level five, the evolutional level, and being expressed in the Supreme level as one of the facets of deity there, the Supreme.
Could the adjuster, where we're at?
You want to just hold it?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, yeah.
At the beginning of this list of seven, I had written in personality side.
Yeah, you have personality and power, creator and controller. This is the personal creator side of the sevenfold. Yeah. And we've talked about that. If you want to kind of use a simple twofold way of talking about the third source and center, use the designation conjoint actor when you're talking about the creator personal side, and the designation infinite spirit when you're talking about the controller non-personal side. And you'll see they do that, and they get to the other list. Conjoint actor, infinite spirit. You know, and again, reminding yourself that the fact that that adjective is infinite, they're trying to tell you that that side of it is more of a reservoir-like phenomenon. Out of that reservoir, you create an individuated downstepped expression that's called a creative spirit. You know, that's coming out of the infinite spirit side. It's not some, you're not breaking off a chunk of the personality, which is absolutely encased, you know, the conjoint actor side, that you can't break that. You absolutely can't break absolute personality grip, you know, and you know, it's the infinite spirit side that's creating a downstepped expression as a creative spirit. And again, see, that's the beauty of this, you know, that how carefully they use infinite as an adjective when it has a measure of reservoir-like character in the picture.
I want to state that I appreciate the fact that you keep bringing up the precision of the words. Mm-hmm. In a pedagogical sense, this is what every Urantia book reader needs to understand, is that they did not just say, oh, well, this word's good enough. Yeah. Ever.
Exactly. I dare them to translate this word.
They never did that. They have gone through this, and in a non-linear fashion, with this back and flow. I mean, they've had the whole of this revelation in mind, which is why, you know, anybody who's looking for little minor inconsistencies, like the fellow that championed Andre Traversa and said, you know, yeah, you see these inconsistencies here between, you know, whether they're talking about billion or million or whatever. If you don't challenge yourself to think, well, either it's either that Christie mistyped something, okay, that's your fallback, or they're trying to tell you something that you can't get by the mere juxtaposition or by the mere, you know, looking at one sentence. They want to state it from two different angles in a way that you're going to synthesize a new truth that they weren't going to put into words for you.
Like we just did. Like I just, you know, that aside I just did. That's a great example where if you're not a truth seeker, if you're a fact finder, and hence first, and hence you're an error seeker is what you'll end up being inexorably, you know, if you try to put fact finder before truth seeker. I just showed you a inconsistency, an error in the book. Right here, it says that the attributes come from the Paradise Trinity. And then we go back and read that other one. It says the Trinity doesn't have any attributes. Aha! Okay. Is it the book that has an error? No. It's what's between your ears that's got an error. You've got an incorrect assumption in play. What is it? You know, most likely, like in this case, you know, it looks like an error because you're thinking too simplistically about it. They told you that they're not going to spoon feed this stuff to you. If anything, they're going to do just like Jesus did. They're going to say it so that if you're clueless, it'll be really easy for you to go on in your cluelessness, in your self-assuredness, you know, in your your preconceived opinions, settled ideas, and long-standing prejudices. You know, they're going to make it very comfortable for you to just be there. Okay, you know, they'll give you a whole bunch of easy errors. You know, it's like, let's just throw this away and go back to him. You know, but if you have any ears to hear or eyes to see, you know that's not an error. You know that's a challenge to you to step it up a notch. See if you can widen your relationship to the whole enough where you can see that that's not an error. Okay, and you can do it. You know, if you have the courage to let go of your little space and reach out.
Do we err sometimes in making your answer, turning it into an allegory versus a parable? I mean, there's two sides to it, I find, in experience in life. And some of the times, and I think it has to do with the fact that our mind is human and the words are human and so on and so forth, and the depth of what you really learn after studying it more and more tend to give you different perspectives that you don't always get from just the words, so to speak. It's more the a parable side versus a...
And resist the temptation to say, well, you know, I don't think that has any literal understanding. I think it's just an allegory for... you want to resist that temptation. I can tell you from years of experience, it's a sad thing to do. You're cutting yourself off from an incredible experience.
But there's,
yeah,
there's
what
a
you
side,
can discover.
Let me
you know?
Say, there's a side that me, as a average human being, I don't always understand it all. So instead of really trying to understand it all, so to speak, I say to myself, well, I'm going to accept it in faith. And if I can't figure it out in this life, I'm going to figure it out eventually.
And that's fine. Yeah, and that's fine. You know, just, I mean, know your limits. But know your limits. Don't sell yourself short. Mm-hmm. You have an adjuster. You have a fragment of the absolute infinite within your mind. Give it a chance. You know? Give it a little chance. Maybe, just maybe, you might be able to see things that you didn't think you could see. If you just take the time and are patient with yourself and let yourself gently and slowly at your pace grow.
Well, both you and John said the key word there I heard was perspective. Recently I talked to a couple of people who had said exactly the same thing about a couple of different incidents. One was, and that was, well, that's unforgivable. I can't forgive that. And, you know, it's like, really?
I am that small.
Yeah. And the only thing I can say is, well, you know, you can build a little bigger perspective. You know your limits, but you also have to know by faith, if nothing else, that you're going to grow, that you're going to get a bigger perspective. You know, if, you know, if nothing else, you're going to die and get a bigger perspective when you wake up on the other side. You know, so I think that's a wonderful gift, is recognizing that there's more. It's just...
Bottom-up forgiveness has distinct limits, like that person was declaring.
Yeah.
Top-down doesn't. Because top-down, the word gets redefined at its origin. It's no longer some sort of a thing like you thought it was from the bottom up view. It's initiating our origin point is patient love is the definition of forgiveness. That's the viewpoint of the Father, you know, who forgives you before you do it. Why? Because he's love, and he's eternal. Fairly patient, love. Okay? It just is. Okay? There's no... I mean, forgiveness really just loses all of its sort of bottom-up definition. It's meaningless, really. What it really is patient love. You know? Just love patiently. You know? And, you know, you'll never take offense. And you'll never have to do that bottom-up forgiveness thing that has distinct limits that you just can't go beyond. All of that will just disappear if you just let go of that little, tiny, fearful, limited self. And start with the adjuster as your origin point and build on it. Just like the Supreme starts with the Trinity and builds on it. Start at the other end.
You said a while ago there are three spirit of truth, the thought adjuster. What's the third?
Holy Spirit.
Holy Spirit.
Three
gifts.
Yep.
I'm Chris.
Three great and divine gifts.
I think you'd explained to me before this waiting for or the halfway point where it's no more a halfway point once you grab.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
God grabs you up.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, for instance, one of the ways that feeds into what I was just saying is, you know, when we look at the levels of meaning, like in the hourglass, the bottom there, the level zero is the level of fear. You know, and if forgiveness is founded upon that level, that foundation, where you're trying to somehow build up from fear, you know, through anguish and dread and awe and reverence, and trying to somehow get forgiveness in there, it's very difficult. It's going to have its distinct limits. But if you can let spiritual gravity grab a hold of you Yeah, let the adjuster, you know, you've got that focus point. You know, it's like a spiritual tip, so that spiritual gravity is right there, intimate. Just let that flip the picture around, so that you're founded on that spiritual gravity foundational point. You know, and then in terms of these issues, you know, in order to even get look down in there in that lower domain where you're struggling with justice and, you know, and fairness and all these difficult things, you know, of children, you know, you can't even see them without looking through the lens in the middle, which is patience. Everything is now viewed through the lens of patience. Before, you couldn't even, you know, all of this mud completely blocked the view of patience above you. Now it's the only way that you can actually even engage these issues is through patience. And so that, see, that's the cosmic character facet. You know, the forgiveness, altruism, forbearance, and patience directly, tolerance, and fortitude. Every one of those, the adjective, the modifier, is relative to that third level of meaning. You know, like patient, love.
How long shall I bear with
you? You know, right. Or altruism is self-neutral mercy. Remember that, that besides patience, it's self-neutrality and temperance. That lens now. It's going to add to everything that you had before. You know, and so it's not just mercy. It's now self-neutral mercy. It's altruism. Forbearance, patient restraint. Tolerance, tempered zeal. Fortitude, patient courage. See, every one of these things now has been transformed because you have to look through the lens of the third level in order to form these things. You now have a cosmic character instead of that bottom-up character. You know, everything, you know, behold, all things have become new.
Chris?
You can literally picture it, see? If you just let these analogies that we've created just speak, you know, what, you know, the geometry of their forms. You can literally see why that's true. I have to look through that lens. That changes everything. I didn't have to do that before when I was down there in the mud. Okay? All I could just see the mud and be the mud, all those mud.
And react to it and say, that's just the way I am.
But there's another part to that. You said the word sad, so now applying that, they can look at that as what kind of pity? You know, pity for the person that keeps on going, has this, keeps the struggle of courage and loyalty, or?
Well, I mean, the sad, it always, it's sad, you know, they always bring up that, a line like that, it's sad to record, say, or similar lines. When you have the means to this, you have three great and divine gifts given to you. You have everything you need to make all things new. How sad is it that you don't utilize them? You don't have to journey one inch to get them. They've gone from infinity down to you, bridged the whole gap. How sad is it that you don't use them? The pain that the universe feels, you know, when you've been given everything and you declare you're nothing. That's what's sad.
Don't they even say that the Father, you know, he doesn't want to lose anybody, but somebody's going to, in the universe, is going to say, sorry, I don't want to continue. Let me out of it. But, that's sad for the Father. On the other hand, he's infinite, and you know, he's pure love. So it's kind of a dichotomy. It's not real sadness; it's divine sadness in a way. But they're speaking to human beings as well. So you kind of gotta work it.
Yeah. And I know it. I know it's coming up here some point where they actually use that word co-creator. You know, none of this happens automatically. You know, all of this incredible potential is completely stopped by you because you have absolute free will. It only functions if you choose.
Yeah.
You have to choose. All you have to do is open the door, and then boom, motion is in play. Remember, it's a universe of motion. You know, you're not going to open a door and a marble's going to fall and rattle around in your cranium. Okay, there's no static here. You open the door and whoosh, you become part of the flow of the cosmos. You're in motion. Okay, you know, but it's all limited by your choice. You know, that's that what the co-creator means. Everything's predicated on your choice. All right, let's do this next section because it ties in with here. So let's keep a rolling. Who wants to?
Schuler.
Okay.
Did that kind of sound in the last recording, Andre? Yeah. A couple months ago. Yeah. The inner life.
All right.
It's been used, and it's not the first one that's ended up this way. Okay, just give me a...
It's part of the flow.
Inside out, the dumpster.
Three, the Almighty and Paradise Deity. The Paradise Deities not only act directly in their gravity circuits throughout the grand universe, but they also function through their various agencies in other manifestations, such as... 1. The mind focalizations of the third source and center. The finite domains of energy and spirit are literally held together by the mind presences of the conjoint actor. This is true from the creative spirit in a local universe, through the reflective spirits of a super universe, to the master spirits in the grand universe. The mind spirits emanating from these varied intelligence focuses. Thank you. The mind circuits emanating from these varied intelligence. What did I say?
Spirits.
Interesting. The mind circuits emanating from the. I'm always interested in like what's the Freudian slip or the superconscious slip? I don't know. The mind circuits emanating from these varied intelligence focuses represent the cosmic arena of creature choice. Mind is the flexible reality which creatures and creators can so readily manipulate. It is the vital link connecting matter and spirit. The mind bestowal of the third source and center unifies the spirit person of God the Supreme with the experiential power of the evolutionary Almighty.
Okay. That last little part, you know, we have two substances, and there's this more fluid-like, like you're saying, malleable energy that links them. You can see they're very directly painting that picture there. But the first part of this, very interesting. Okay. Mind presences. And we were just talking about that last time. There are wombs. You know, that establish a presence of mind within that womb. And they start rattling off the hierarchy of wombs here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, creative, you know, spirit in the local universe, through the reflective spirits in the super universe, and the master spirits in the grand universe. And it's like, okay, now think about that a little bit more carefully. Okay, again, we notice that they purposely left out the mother thing, but they're just begging you to fill out the rest of the picture here. you know, because we don't want the direction, we want the presence. They said so right at the beginning. We want to think about the womb here, literally. Okay, so let's, you know, so yeah, the creative mother spirit, the local womb of the local mind. On the super universe level, there are seven wombs created by the reflective mother spirits. They purposely used that expression one time just in case you hadn't, you know, it wasn't obvious that you could stick that word in there. They literally write it that way one time to remind you that those are womb expressions. The reflective mother spirits, how do they come about? So you go back and you read. Oh, so the seven master spirits, each one by one engaged the Paradise Trinity, and made a reflective Mother Spirit. Or seven of them. Yeah. One flavor of reflective Mother Spirit. Okay. You have these local wombs, the creative Mother Spirits, at the super universe level. You have the actual womb that's ministering directly, ministering the mind, that is the relationship between the spirit activities of the master spirits and the power activities of the supreme power directors. The relationship between those two is the cosmic mind. But who holds it? Who administers it? You know, in what mind womb is it? It's not the master spirit. He doesn't make a mind womb. The mind womb is a mother. You know, it's the reflective mother spirits. So there's seven of them in each one. The seven together create a mind womb. Now, it's obviously it's a much more sophisticated phenomenon than at the local level. It literally takes these seven beings to make this fancier type of womb at the super universe level. But it is nonetheless.
Chris?
Yeah?
That word womb is throwing me off. Mm-hmm. You got a better word, a different word?
No, it's very...
This word, I'm not finding it in this book.
It's very important. When you say she, I mean, remember, everything is, you know, if I look at a human woman, I know one of the fundamental things that they manifest is womb for children. Okay, where did that attribute come from? It had to have gotten downstepped. Wombs don't just come out of nowhere. There has to be a womb on high. That is a downstepped expression in a human female. Female, you know, what's that fundamental differential? He is direction, she is place. She is womb, she is a presence. Not a point, she's a distributed presence.
Mm-hmm. So presence is a synonym?
Yeah. Womb. Yeah, and the only reason I say womb instead of just presence, because it's very important to recognize that there's a boundary. Where does Nebadon M end? Is it just an arbitrary dashed line, like a state line on a map? No. There's a literal edge to Nebadon. It is where her presence ends. It's the envelope of the womb. She creates a mind womb that you're inside of. You know, and it's very literal. And you think about some of her, you know, or some of the infinite spirits ministers, the mechanical controllers specifically, you know, of the master physical controllers, that type of master physical controller that are literally called mechanical controllers. Those are the ones that come out first. Like to our developing solar system, and created a little mini womb that shields us from the intense energies.
Space.
You know, when they make that womb, where you're going to, that's protected from the energies that would destroy life, so that you could actually have womb inside, or you have life inside that womb. They give that womb a name, Mon Masha. Literally, what does that mean? Mother, place of man. The womb. Ma, mother. Okay? Mon, man. Mother, place of man. Again, remember that they coin these words to reveal the truth. It's not, well, it's a cool sequence of letters that we can call that thing over there. No, you know, they called it the mother place of man. Why? Because there's literally a cocoon. You could use cocoon, you know, which is kind of a little bit better if you're just kind of talking about the energy side of it. But the whole point is to not just create an energy bubble where it's quieter energy-wise inside here than out here. You're going to make life in there. It's a womb. I mean, a woman has a womb because that baby will be destroyed by the environment if it's not in wombed. It has to be in wombed.
You know, sometimes what I think here is that there's so many different kinds of mind, you know, like our pattern is one of, you know, one of the billion spheres that Michael picked for our particular pattern, or maybe a combination for our mind, and here, and we think through that mind. And then they say, you know, when you graduate, so on and so forth, you get different minds. And it's hard to fathom that, hard to understand all that. Mm-hmm. And so the fluctuations here of the mind of third source and center, you know, they have to really be on top of all mind, all different varieties of mind, all different, you know, understandings mm-hmm. of mind. And for us, you know, sometimes, especially seeing as we come from such a backward world, our mind, our ability to be able to understand the mindedness of the universe or the mindedness of the Supreme, we can only really understand through our own mind. And when you think about other mindedness that's going to be there, or the minds we're going to exchange, like exchanging your mind for Jesus, so to speak, or what our mind's going to be like in the next life we have, etc., I often wonder how we will relate to that, how it would, you know, how that differs from our personality and who we are, mm-hmm. how we begin to think differently mm-hmm. with those different manifestations.
Right. And you know, and I don't want to, but that's a jumping off point to begin to reflect on your relationship to the mother and the father. Through the father, you're made kindred spirits, you know, and you have an absolute personalization that locks on to, you know, to makes you an individuality in that kinship. The mother, there's a kindred mind phenomenon that mankind has not discovered much of yet.
On this world.
If you begin to move up, and mind is all one, as you begin to move up in it, the facets merge together. Right now you have a seven-faceted mind. You move up a notch and it's just one facet. Your Marancha mind is those seven facets merged together into one. You know, it's so as you go up, you know, more and more things that I, you know, right now I have to put my second adjutant together with my third adjutant. I have to actually choose to do that. They're together automatically, a notch up, you know. And just imagine how that hierarchy continues on up, see. Mm-hmm. You know, where things come together that right now we don't even recognize, see. Yeah. All right, just,
hey Chris,
yeah, yep.
One thing you said is really mm-hmm. terrific. I mm-hmm. just wanted to thank you for that.
Okay. Yeah.
The creative mother spirit, mm-hmm. understanding where the universe of Nebadon is, it's a terrific visualization to see it ending where the creative mother spirit ends.
Where her body, where her presence ends.
Yeah, where her presence ends, and how the universes, or how the local universes are divided up by that presence of the creative mother, all the creative mother spirits, instead of some geographical line, although there is a geographical line, but the geographical line would be defined by the creative mother spirit's presence. So thank you for that.
Yeah. And that's why it's called a universe. If it's not called a universe, it's not a womb. It's not a localized presence. If it's a major sector or a minor sector, a constellation, that's more of like, you know, you draw a line. It's here. But the everything that's a universe is very literally so. It is a presence, a particular presence that has a distinct boundary.
So do you think the local universes then bump up to each other? Or going on your point of the constellations and the mm-hmm. major sector, that they don't bump up to each other, and there's space in between these creative mother spirit presences?
I mean, the master physical controllers you know, keep things separated. I mean, the major sectors, you know, are not going to blur together because they're held separate. But see, it's much more of a you know, this sort of controller sort of thing, or director, the direction you were talking about. I mean, those beings are directing major sectors, minor sectors, constellations, local systems to be separate. But they don't have to direct, you know, the boundaries of the presence of a mother. It just is. Now, what they have to do is they have to direct the objects in the local universe to stay within her boundaries. They do have to direct that. But see, just recognizing that there's another thing in play there besides their direction. There is a literal presence. You know, that they're looking at the boundary line. It's like, okay, this thing has to be here, because if it's there, it's not in the local universe because her presence is not over there. Yeah. Whereas with the constellations, there isn't that sort of a presence line. Yeah, they're just, you know, directing it into locations. Okay. Now, the local universes get much closer together when and you're on the inside edge. When you're on the outside of the super universe, they're much more spread apart. But tidal forces bring them into tight, you know, co-location on the Eversus. Or no, on the Havona side, you know, on the other side of Eversa. Yeah. Okay, now, okay, so the hierarchy
because it's narrower. There's literally less space on that side as well.
Without going into too much detail, we're running out of time. Okay.
Pervaded space.
We digress. Okay.
Yes.
No. We got another little thing we got to bring in here. If you remember when I wrote that ascension, conception and birth of a mortal ascender, you know, I talked about material womb, mindal womb, spiritual womb. I mean, the master spirit does create a spiritual womb, but we're talking about mindal wombs here. You know, and so this whole thing. Notice what they've left unexplained here. Okay, they literally give you the wombs, the creative mother spirits, the reflective mother spirits, but they don't give you the other one. They say master spirits in the grand universe. If you've ever thought about this, you know you're going to leave the super universe womb at some point. You know, you go into Havona, and then especially as you come out as a finality and you're going everywhere, what womb are you inside of? You're not using supreme mind. You're not in that total womb. What's going on? That's related to this, in the grand universe. If you go back, if you think about, you've got these three levels. You've got it very definitive on that first level, creator, master creator sons and creative mother spirits. Those other two levels, masters or the master spirits and the ancients of days. The reflective mother spirits, the master spirits, you know, create this downstepped expression relative to the Trinity and make these reflective spirits down here with the ancients of days to make the actual wombs that the ancients of days are functioning within. There's a reciprocal expression. Because remember, you know, the master spirits are distinct. They won't make the seven super universes distinct. But when you're talking about just functioning everywhere in all seven super universes of finaliter, you've transcended that distinctiveness. You're in a womb that's not distinct, like the master spirits make distinct wombs. You're in some womb, you know, that wraps all the way around. The ancients of days are the same, remember? Mm-hmm. They're Trinity origin beings. They're the same all the way around. Okay, they aren't distinct like around the seven super universes. They're not like the master spirits that are very distinct. Okay, and the ancients of the days, they tell you, remember they allude to it a couple times, there's the creative agencies of the ancients of days. Okay.
They only mention it a little bit.
And why, and twice that I know of. They say they're unrevealed both times. Why are they unrevealed? First and foremost, forget about all the things that we don't know about, but it's very obvious why they wouldn't be revealed, because this is about the ascension scheme. Okay. When I become a finality and go back out, I'm done with the ascension scheme. Yeah. Okay? Those are the she's. Those unrevealed creative agencies. You see, creative agent, creative mother. Yeah, they purposely give you hint words. Mm-hmm. Okay, they create that common womb that envelops the whole grand universe, all seven super universes. Okay, and so, you know, one, the master spirits project down, and the ancients of days project up. See, they work in reciprocal; they're a reciprocal pair in the father mother role here. Okay, and if you go back to the previous section, I told you. They made a statement that we would get back to. That second to the last paragraph, it says, the time-space mind, the cosmic mind, is differentially functioning in the seven super universes. Yeah, that's the seven wombs we just talked about.
Seven master spirits, yeah.
It's the second to the last paragraph of the previous section. The time-space mind, the cosmic mind, is differentially functioning in the seven super-universes, but is coordinated by some unknown associative technique in the Supreme Being. That what they're alluding to there is, what's not unknown is the, you know, the mind, you know, womb that encompasses all seven, like we were just alluding to, the creative agencies, the Ancients of Days. But what's unknown to them is how that womb that embraces the grand universe is tied to the womb of the total that has supreme mind in it. That's what they're alluding to there. That's what that sentence is about. There's some sort of curious relationship between this sort of filling up the space by adding the parts until it fills the space, and filling up the space from the top down where it just is filled. They're telling you there's an interface there that is beyond their understanding, because it's at the level of the total finite where that interface occurs, and they don't understand how that works. But in some way, see, the combination of the Ancients of Days and the Master Spirits and the wombs that go with them are tied into, say, the finite upholder and the supreme mind.
Yeah.
Okay? That's what that's all about. Yeah, Jason?
What about the womb mind of your biological mother?
Yeah, there's even a little bit of a downstepped expression there of this phenomenon. Remember, they tell you that roughly until age 16, you're still within the sphere of mind engagement that your parents, you know, the grip that your parents have on the mind. You're still connected to them. You're still inside of that little mindal over-control space. You're dependent upon them. You know, that's why, you know, if you go to the first mansion world, you basically won't find anyone there younger than age 16, because it's only at roughly that age that that individual has a separate grip on mind, isn't dependent upon the two biologic parents to partially be holding it together.
Is that one of the seven wombs of mind?
No, I mean, see, it's sort of, and both mother and father are involved. I mean, it's a reflection, if you will. It's a downstep reflection of this fact that you begin, you know, in a whole series of wombs in a lot of different ways. You're always within something that's bigger than you and are dependent upon that for being upheld. You know, even when you get to co-absoluteness and beyond, you're always going to be within the infinite womb, the infinite upholder. Okay? I mean, there's, you know, because none of us are island universes. We all depend upon the first source and center of everything. Okay. All right, let's... So I just wanted to belabor that a little bit, because to get you really thinking about this, and we'll pick up on it a little bit more. I believe it's the next section. Yeah, when they mention Magistan and his relationship to this phenomenon.
I was about to mention that one of the secrets of Spiritington is reflectivity, and that also could explain why this is unknown to them, but. Mm-hmm. Just as a result of this study, you've given me an insight into the nature of the major sectors that I didn't think about before.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. 2, the personality revelations of the second source and center. The mind presences of the conjoined actor unify the spirit of divinity with the pattern of energy. The bestowal incarnations of the eternal sun and his paradise sons unify, actually fuse, the divine nature of a creator with the evolving nature of a creature. The supreme is both creature and creator. The possibility of his being such is revealed in the bestowal actions of the eternal sun and his coordinate and subordinate sons. The bestowal orders of sonship, the Michaels and the Avenals, actually augment their divine natures with bona fide creature natures, which have become theirs by the living of the actual creature life on the evolutionary worlds. When divinity becomes like humanity Inherent in this relationship is the possibility that humanity can become divine.
Yeah, they pointed out this two flow, the descending and ascending, is a very direct manifestation of the twofold flow. They're alluding to it there again. Just a couple little things to notice there. The detail, the minutiae of the detail that they take care of. The Supreme is both creature and creator. Why isn't creator capitalized like it often is?
Because it's coming from the finite level. Right?
Because technically the word they used was not God the Supreme, but just the deity, just the Supreme. It's like I pointed out, noticing the difference of when supremacy is capitalized and when it's not. Lowercase s supremacy is divinity, but capital S supremacy is deity.
Personal.
Okay. This is all very, very careful like this. Just wanted to point that out. But okay, we mentioned this, this fundamental, the focalizing is involved here. You've got creator and creature. If you're going to have this element of the Supreme, the creature, creator, unifying deity, that phenomenon, what's bringing that together into a focus? That's what they're talking about here. So that whole focalization that's involved in bringing creator and creature together. Also, you might notice they're talking about you have beings that are coming down who are experiential beings. Why are they experiential? Where did they get that from? I thought the Universal Father, the Eternal Son, and the Infinite Spirit were existential deity. And I thought all of these beings came from them. So how could they possibly have the potential of experience if they're coming from existential deity? Remember we pointed that out recently. The Eternal Son and the Infinite Mother Spirit started out purely existential, but they've tacked experiential on. Before time began, they had those first experiences in Havona. And added experiential nature onto them. So when you create a downstepped expression like a creator son, he acquires the potential to be experiential because he got it from the creative mother son. That's where that came from. It didn't come from the father, but it came from the eternal son, gave that that individual experiential ability.
Yeah. When it says in this paragraph, bestowal actions of the Eternal Son and his coordinate, what does that mean? What is the coordinate?
Coordinate and subordinate sons.
Coordinate and subordinate sons.
Is coordinate with the Eternal Son?
Good
point, Joel. Yeah.
Remember, they tell you. There's a bunch of things you can take off like this on. Remember, they tell you that there's all kinds of unrevealed phenomena, especially in relation to suns. Even at the local universe level, there's suns they haven't revealed. There's a lot of sonship in play in the universe that we have no revelation of. But you notice in passing things like that, see? For instance, what on earth is going on the Eternal Sun's worlds?
Yeah.
Could it perhaps be coordinate suns, and their nature is just incomprehensible to everyone? And but that's what they're pointing out.
Luminosity beyond our conception.
Invoking the bigger picture there a little bit.
Do you exclude definitely the Paradise Creator suns as potentially coordinate suns?
Well, you can take that tack too, where they're definitely coordinated with, in one sense, but they're subordinate to in another sense. So, they're coordinate in intent, but subordinate in extent. Mm-hmm. You can think about it like that. But, you know, it's just like, you know, you were saying, it strikes you that they don't really mean coordinate and subordinate sons. It kind of strikes you as coordinate sons and subordinate sons, you know. But it's not, I'm absolutely certain, but, yeah. So, you know, a lot of times they're purposely sort of vague like that and just leave you to wonder if it has something to do with all that stuff they haven't revealed. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I just wanted to point out that, you know, you have to invoke the mother in Eternal Mother Son, you know, to think about this, you know, to get the experiential in play. You know, and you also have this, you know, only in relation to the whole and through the individuality of the whole do creature and creator come together. You know, the fundamental role, the focalizing aspect of the mother in that phenomenon. Mm-hmm. Okay, go to the next one.
3, the indwelling presences of the first source and center. Mind unifies spirit causations with energy reactions. Bestowal ministry unifies divinity dissensions with creature ascensions. And the indwelling fragments of the Universal Father actually unify the evolving creatures with God on paradise. There are many such presences of the Father which indwell numerous orders of personalities. And in mortal man, these divine fragments of God are the thought adjusters. The mystery monitors are to human beings what the Paradise Trinity is to the Supreme Being. The adjusters are absolute foundations. And upon absolute foundations, free will choice can cause to be evolved the divine reality of an eternaliter nature, finaliter nature in the case of man, deity nature in God the Supreme.
That's the one time that they use that term, eternaliter, to take you beyond finaliter, beyond supremacy. But a couple things to notice in here. When we were reading through the adjuster papers, we used what we learned in going through total deity very carefully. You know, and we said, okay, I've got this fragment of the Father. What reservoir did it come out of? You know, if I'm going to fragment something, I'm taking something out of a reservoir. You know, and I go through the aspects of the Father. I have first center, you know, that aspect of the universal one of infinity. No, infinite one. Ooh, okay, there's a reservoir and the first source. Universal Father, Universal Creator, Universal Controller, Infinite Upholder. You know, I go through the list and I notice there's only two reservoirs. There's the Infinite One and the Infinite Upholder. And coincidentally, there's two gifts that the Father gives us. You know the Infinite One is the reservoir of all will. That's where, you know, you individuate a measure of that will. That's your personality. That's where that personality came from. The Thought Adjuster is an individuation out of the Infinite Upholder reservoir. Given to you. It's out of that reservoir. So in this one, we're talking about a fragment of the Infinite Upholder, that aspect of the Father. Have you picked it up on it yet? We have numbers 1, 2, and 3. The first one was womb, the second one was focalizer, and the third one was upholder. Wait a minute, didn't I read those in that same order back in the Trinity paper? Okay. They literally have them in the same order as they did back there in the Trinity paper. Yeah. You've got totality attitude, coordinate action, and cosmic overcontrol. You've got womb, focalizer, upholder. So in the midst of giving you the viewpoint, you know, of from the Father's side here, like they are so, yeah, underneath it is the mother side. In the exact same order as they listen. I mean, that kind of detail. They actually put them in the same order as they did back there in paper 10. Is it not cool? Yeah, I ask you.
Chris, can you talk to the sentence, the mystery monitor, just are
to
human beings?
Yep, that was the other thing. I said there was two things. That's the other thing. here we are in section three of this paper. They repeat that in section three of the next paper. We'll talk about it a little bit more. They bring up a different aspect of what they mean by that there. Here, they explain what they mean. In this sense, they're starting you with that parallel. That, see, the adjusters are absolute foundations. It's the foundation part. So they're saying, in the same way, like I was saying, if you choose, you can make the adjuster your new foundation. Instead of that fear-ridden mechanical controller self, you can make the adjuster your new foundation. You'll be seating yourself on a foundation just like the Supreme is seated upon, the Trinity. That same immutable foundation. And why? And again, why are they in such close parallel here? Because we've talked about that. I mean, this whole functionality of the Trinity and the adjusters are related to this relationship around this side of the ellipse. In order to get me a father fragment, I have to take an individuation out of the infinite upholder reservoir. That's in level 6. You know, the infinite upholder expands through the infinite capacity of level 7 and engages the Trinity. Okay, and the Isle of Paradise, which is the absolute of individuation. See, so the only way that that thing can be individuated is relative to the Isle. Everything that's individuated is in relationship to the Isle, the absolute of individuation, absolute of individuality. That's how that relationship came about. You know, because the infinite holder spans that gap. So it brings the Isle of Paradise into relationship with that. So it becomes individuated. But, you know, it's reaching me. It's got to reach down from the infinite level, where the infinite upholder is, down through the absolute, the absinite, supreme, down into the final. How does it do that? Well, fortunately, the Paradise Trinity has a downstep functionality that it can ride down and get to me. See? So, the adjuster gets to me. Not only does it provide a foundation, but it gets to me. Kind of in the same way we've been talking about the spirit and personality of the Supreme gets to it. The Trinity's downstepping ability is key to making this happen. Yeah. So that, but they're just, you know, here they just wanted you to focus on the foundation part, and you'll see what else they bring up in that next paper.
You tended to emphasize that, you know, it's almost like we went through the adjuster papers and there's like warning and danger. And, but it's like you've kind of taken off and yeah. Probably because the book does. Yeah. The Revelators do. You've kind of taken off those warnings as we've gotten to the Supreme papers. And this is what the adjuster is most able to do for us, you know. And if we can start utilizing it for comprehending the flow of the Supreme. Yeah. Like Jesus said, faith contemplation of the Father and attempted realization of the Supreme.
Yeah. And
way back 2,000 years ago.
And how, I would never recommend what we're doing here, really challenging ourselves to have enough relationship with the consciousness the adjuster can bring into my mind. And in a very immature state. I've been maturing, and you've all been maturing over years of relationship with the revelation, getting you grounded. Even if the viewpoint wasn't too big yet, it was getting you fairly solidly grounded. So that if you try to challenge yourself, you're not going to go flying off into an ism, danger, 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 danger. Okay? Because that's the problem of an immature person. You know, taking up that challenge. Okay, yeah, I'll cut all the tethers and just let the boundaries go flying out. You know, and that person is gone. They're never coming back. Okay. So we only do this. We only take up this challenge after we know that we've got ourselves refounded. See, even that, the care, before they actually bring up all that more complicated stuff in the next paper, the first thing they mention is foundation. See, before you start thinking, ooh, I'm just like the Supreme, let her rip, you know, just start with the foundation part. You know, that thing that Jesus talked about, rock, sand, okay? The zeroth level meaning that's the sand. The adjuster, that's the rock. Build your life upon that new foundation, that rock. If you feel that you very patiently and sincerely got your feet there a little bit, Now gently see if you can, what you can reach out from that new foundation point.
Yeah. This sentence, there are many such presences mm-hmm. of the Father which indwell numerous words and personalities. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Other fragments.
How many did they reveal in the book?
I don't know if they ever go specific. I think they just always say general. There's thought adjusters and there's other father fragments.
There's non-adjuster father fragments that, for instance, fuse with seraphim and other beings. But
there's no names. It's always spoken of general.
This is something we'll learn later.
Yeah. That creative speculation quote. We're certainly. We could give them names if we wanted to,
I just wondered how many types of beings had father fragments and how many they'd actually mentioned in the book. But my bet is they didn't mention very many, and there's a lot.
They didn't.
Yeah. And one little thing, too, to bring in. Our thought adjuster is a fragment of the infinite upholder. Sun-fused mortals, that fragment they fused with, that's an individuation of a lesser mother. That's in the reflective mother spirits.
Yeah.
That's a measure of their substance individuated that it fused with. You drop down another notch, the creative mother spirit, there's an individuation of that the spirit fused mortal fuses with. See, and there it's very directly mother. See, but even all it, remember, infinite upholder is the point where mother and father meet and the names disappear, lose their meaning. Finite upholder, absolute upholder, absolute upholder is very mother, mother, mother. Then the infinite upholder is, well, that's mother and father and really neither. It's, that's the finally end of the father, the point where fatherness transitions over into motherness. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's always coming up in here. I mean, we're constantly referring to the infinite upholder to understand what they're saying here because that's the jumping off point from the father. And that relationship of that endpoint of the Father to the other side of the original, to the Paradise Trinity, that's what's making this whole experiential domain happen. The other part is locked in the existentialness. Mm-hmm. But that dynamic spark across those two plates, the plate of the Paradise Trinity and that plate of the Infinite Upholder, there's this dynamic phenomenon that's sparking between them, flowing this way and this way. That's why we have the two flows. That's what we're talking about. And that gap, it's the infinite capacity. At the top level, it's an infinite gap. But there's downstep gaps too. And it's flowing, it's sparking back and forth across that gap, that capacity. It's like a capacitor in the capacitance. It's all very direct to think about. If you just let the pictures and the words they chose speak.
When you do that thing, I'm always trying to put paradise in that model, but you're not.
Paradise is up in level one.
Okay.
It's at the static level.
Okay, and I'm looking at the top side of paradise is they say is personality and spirit coming around this way. And then the bottom side, nether paradise, coming with the mother force of space, coming around in counterclockwise motion.
Yeah, remember, and we did that. We went through total deity. Well, you weren't here. But we did that, the energy spectrum. Starting at paradise energy.
So where would the infinite upholder be in that where paradise is in the top side, the bottom? Where would the infinite upholder be in that?
It's related to the differential across, just like
differential across the top
thick,
and
the thickness is the separation between the deity absolute and the unqualified absolute, the universal absolute is a relationship. See, it's sparking across the plates.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's wrap her up here.
Talking your
The creature bestowals of the Paradise Orders of Sonship enable these divine sons to enrich their personalities by the acquisition of the actual nature of universe creatures, while such bestowals unfailingly reveal to the creatures themselves the Paradise path of divinity attainment. The adjuster bestowals of the Universal Father enable him to draw the personalities of the volitional will creatures to himself. And throughout all these relationships in the finite universes, the conjoint actor is the ever-present source of the mind ministry by virtue of which these activities take place. In these and many other ways did the Paradise deities participate in the evolutions of time as they unfold on the circling planets of space, and as they culminate in the emergence of the Supreme Personality consequence of all evolution.
Okay, maybe just one little thing to note there that you know, paint the picture literally, you know, and like they are. While such bestowals unfailingly reveal to the creatures themselves the paradise path of divinity attainment. Okay, there's a path. They're not creating the path. They're illuminating the path, shining a light on the path so that you can see where to walk. The Father's way, what is that? What is that hand that I'm walking, you know, that they're illuminating, that's what I'm going to walk on? The upholder. You know, the Creator's sons, you know, show you the way. They don't make the way. They illuminate it. See? And just to recognize what, you know, ask yourself the question, what is the way? That's the upholder. That's not the Father. You know, the Father is neither the whole nor the individuality of the whole. You know, like we pointed out at the beginning. So just watch for it. They do that some more. You know, and they try to get you to think about, you know, the Father's will and the Father's way are not simplistic synonyms.
So there's almost a neo-Taoistic kind of push here as well. In the same way that, you know, the study of the Father and the life and teachings of Jesus, you know, point us to elevating, you know, the best in the Bible and Christianity and a knowledge of the Father's will and looking at how you can upstep Christianity, there's almost a much quieter push to get us to look at the best in Taoism, mm-hmm. you know, in understanding the Supreme. Because that was understood by those that were practicing Taoism in the highest way that it was being practiced before, you know, it started getting, you know, downgraded. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's a neo-Taoistic push here.
And just, you know, we all know that, you know, we talked about that there's that vague little root there. But boy, does it, you know, in and of itself, it's pretty limited. You know, and the fifth epical revelation is here to show you how you can finally take what they vaguely, you know, thought about way back when and start to really give it some substance. You know, make the way a literal thing, you know. That you're literally going to walk on. You have to have something to walk on. You can't just will yourself there. You have to literally walk. You know? And you don't walk on him. He's a point. You know? If you think you have to walk on him, that's why you start thinking, you know, that God is this knife edge that you're balancing on. If you make the slightest mistake, you know, you're damned. No, infinite upholder. There's a, you know, and absolute upholder, absolute upholder, finite upholder. All right, let's take a moment to bring this all. Yep, yep.
Isn't there a biblical statement that made by Jesus that none comes to the Father
except through me? Right.
So, isn't this an expansion or in a sense an explanation of that?
That's another way to You know, he establishes this flow, so you can take this flow. If he doesn't do that first, there's no way for you to do that second.
And also, isn't that literal because we go through the headquarters of our local universe?
And just like I said, you know, it's always not only the intent but the extent. You can always see it geographically, you know, extensively and intensively. They're both always there. That's the beauty of the cosmos. There's only one first source and center of all things, of the intent and the extent. And so the two are always in parallel like that. Yeah.
It's like lightning.
The
ion trail.
Boom. Yeah. That little, Yeah, he sparks it down, and then the whole mass goes up. Yep. All right. So let's just take a little moment here to reflect on this and bring it together into our personality nature.